Dust off your chaps and get ready for episode number 11 of Sex the Podcast.
Because it's an urban jungle out there, huh, Bob?
It is.
An urban sexual jungle, and our job is to help you all navigate this jungle.
In this episode, we talk to Amy Jo Goddard, and she is the author of Woman on Fire, a new book that's being released right now, which is September of 2015.
And it's really exciting. She's going all out, doing a tour. We really want to encourage you all to check it out. This is her second book, and her first one was Lesbian Sex Secrets for Men. As if that title isn't already intriguing. She knows a lot, and she shares it with her readers, which is amazing.
Amy Jo is a sexual empowerment expert, and she has worked with thousands of people, guiding them toward the fulfillment and wholeness that they want, both sexually and in all the other aspects of their lives.
She earned a master's degree in human sexuality education from NYU and has over 20 years of experience in the sexuality field.
We had a lot of fun talking with her. In this conversation, some of the things we talk about are how your challenges
or successes
around sex and money are deeply interrelated with each other.
And interesting that those are the two things we never talk about.
Sex and money.
Sex and money.
We talk about understanding your sexual possibilities through archetypes, and we'll get more specific in the episode.
And last but not least, that orgasm is available to
every
woman. And what opens up when it becomes available.
We hope that you enjoy this conversation as much as we did. Amy Jo is an incredible woman with a vast depth of knowledge. So sit back, put on your spurs, dust off your chaps, saddle up your horse.
I'm like, why would you put on your spurs to listen to a podcast?
And enjoy Sex the Podcast.
Have fun, y'all. All right.
Thanks for getting together with us today.
Thanks for having me. I love that you came to my beautiful Napa Mountain house before I move out of it.
Yeah. And so, and you're moving out in 2 weeks, and but can you paint the picture for the listener and just talk about the room and the space outside? And
oh gosh, this has been such a dream to live here. I lived in New York City for almost 20 years, and I love New York. I mean, you love New York or you hate it. Well, usually both, actually. usually both, if you're like, you know, true to yourself. But, you know, I was really made for New York for a long time. And, you know, not everyone is made for New York. And it was one of those things where as soon as I hit the ground in New York, I was just like, oh, I'm home. And I kind of never knew, like, oh, when, how am I going to know when I'm done with New York? Like, how do you know you're done with a place like that? And it just hit me really fast. I just was sort of like, wow, I'm doing my own business full time. I had left academia after I'd been part time in academia for 15 years and doing my business part time and, you know, a lot of consulting and different things. And finally, I was like, why do I live here where my office is a hallway and I look out the window at a brick wall, even though I did have a very cute little house in Brooklyn, you know, it still
was like... I thought you were
going
to say I had a very cute brick wall.
No, the brick wall wasn't cute at all. It wasn't even a pretty one. It was more of a cinder block wall. But I just finally was like, wow, I could have a real office with a view somewhere.
Yeah.
Where is that place? And I had never been able to go to Burning Man because of teaching. So, because I was always back in school the week before. So I was like, all right, I'm driving to Burning Man this year. I'm finally going to go. And then I'm just going to drive to Cali because I'm from California. And I always kind of figured maybe eventually I'd end up back out here. I was like, I'm just going to do a little reconnaissance trip all over California and decide where I'm going to live. Because I can go anywhere. And so I have tons of friends and family out here. My dad lives out here. And I just traveled all over the state of California for a couple months, 3 months, I think. And Napa was like my second stop. And I had a friend that was living up here on the mountain. So we're up the Highway 121. It's just north of, northeast of downtown Napa. And it's just beautiful mountains and all the oak trees and the moss hanging from the trees. We were talking about the road earlier, like car clubs and bike clubs drive these roads because they're so beautiful. Mm-hmm. So I went from like you know, New York City subway commute to, like, I bought a nice car. I'm like, I now have this, like, beautiful commute up this mountain. Mm-hmm. And I wanted space, spaciousness. That was really my word. And I was like, I am seeking spaciousness. Yeah. I am going to find that somewhere. Yeah. And
so
my friend,
just in your house, but outside, mm-hmm. just spacious,
just
car,
everywhere, yeah. You know. And I just, yeah, I was living with a friend further up the road. It was too far. It was like 40 minutes. She was up by Lake Berryessa, and it was like 40 minutes to get downtown. I'm like, I'm used to having a bodega on every corner. I can't do that. That's too much. But yeah, and there's just like, I had identified this little neighborhood mm-hmm. to live in.
Got a nice view of the rolling hills.
Oh my God, it's so beautiful. I mean, we're just surrounded by trees and mountains. There's not even any light pollution on the mountains at night. There's nothing. Mm. It's just dark. Man. I can see every star in the sky after living somewhere my whole adult life where I couldn't see stars, mm-hmm. you know. So it's just, and there's so much sunlight, and I wanted all of that. And it's just been so healing to be here. I mean, I joke about, like, I came here to, like, recover from my PTSD from New York.
Like I just couldn't handle
it. Oh my God, just the noise and the, like, it just was becoming maddening, you know. It just felt like it was creeping in on me. So now I can go back to New York, and, you know, she's my weekend lover. We can have a good time.
Yeah.
But I don't have to be there all the time, yeah. So.
That's funny you say that. This is a total side note, but I definitely, and it's a blog post waiting to happen one day, but my open relationship with the cities that I live in and love.
Totally.
And it's just like my first love, and then the one that was like, we're lifetime partners, and I can have my flings with, like, Austin and just, but yeah. And it feels like that because I love yeah. them all.
Yep.
And I have a very different, distinct relationship with each one.
Yeah.
But I'm open, they're open, they all know about each other. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just, yeah, it's great.
Yeah. No, I mean, place is, it's so important in so many ways. And as I've been in this writing process, right, you know, I came here also to write my book, and so I've finished my book, and that's on its way. And when I was writing, like, the notes and the acknowledgments in my book, I thanked the places where I wrote the book, you know. I wrote the first draft in Paris, and then I completed the book here in Napa and also on a writing retreat in Maui. And so those were the three sexy, beautiful places that impacted my book. I was like, I want to write it in a sexy, yummy place. I'm writing about sexuality, you know, and that, I think that really impacts the work that we're able to do. Yeah. So,
and speaking of sexuality, one of the first questions we love to ask people is, what is a Cliff Notes version of your sex and sexuality from when you first either experienced it or thought about it or came into your consciousness to now? What's the Cliff Notes version?
Oh, the Cliff Notes. Well, I have a TEDx talk where I talked about, you know, being shamed when I was like 7 or 8 mm. by my mother because I would touch my genitals through my clothes. I wasn't even masturbating. I just was like, wow, this part of my body, like, it smells different from the rest of my body. This is really interesting, you know. And I was just sort of fascinated by it, and I didn't have any shame about it until I figured out, you know, until she shamed me. Right. And then I was like, oh wow, that's really bad to touch your genitals. And, you know, she was really, you know, unwittingly successful in preventing me from doing that. I mean, I didn't touch myself again, even to, like, for anything other than washing for 10 years until I went to college. I grew up in a single parent family with my father. So, and he was a military man, and we moved a lot. So he was very, intimidating to most of my boyfriends and friends, and, you know, the ones who could get him to joke with them always were like, they were in, you know. But needless to say, he was very quintessentially military and conservative. He was a single dad raising 3 kids. Like, I give my dad such huge props, like, amazing man. And doing it at a time when, like, people just were not doing that. Fathers were not really doing that. But, you know, he had no tools to deal with sexuality. I was the oldest, so I went through everything first. And he didn't know how to handle it other than to, like, put me on restriction and try to, like, keep me away from the boys. And, you know, I remember the day I started menstruating, you know, we were like living in Maine. My mother was still in Southern California. I mean, I was like super far away, you know. And I told him, and it was like we were in the middle of this huge blizzard. We lived on base. And so he like hopped on the snowmobile, drove to the BX where like where you get your stuff on the base, and just got me a bunch of pads and stuff. Came home and just like didn't even look at me, just handed me the bag and was like, here you go. Okay, let's not talk about this. So I just was super isolated. I had no resources. I went through pregnancy scares. I started having sex way too young. I wasn't ready. Was my choice, like many people. And it just really, it wasn't until college that, you know, I went to UC Santa Barbara, and I had amazing sex educators with John and Janice Baldwin, who are still there. And it just like, I couldn't wait to take the sexuality class. I'd never had any sex ed in school. My education got messed up because I went to 3 different high schools, right. And you know, so it's like I would miss things. And so it wasn't until then that I really got that education. And I was like, why did I have to wait this long? This is crazy. This would have helped me so much 5 years ago, 6 years ago. So yeah, you know, and I became a feminist activist, and I just was like, wow, I like, it just opened up my world. Both those two things opened up my world so much. And so that really led me into wanting to do the work, and took me to New York to go to grad school and get a master's in human sexuality education. And I've never turned back. So, you know, and then my own process, of course. I mean, it's like I'm in these amazing communities. I've had incredible mentors. I found myself surrounded by just like some of the most incredible feminists and sex educators in New York, and just getting to learn from them. And I feel really blessed that I've had that. Not everyone gets that. So now I've been piecing together all the stuff I've gotten to learn and explore, and trying to give it to people in a way that's palatable for them and meets them where they are.
Mm-hmm. How do you think that expansion of your knowledge and learning and mentors, how has that directly affected your sex? Like your relationship to sex, or having of sex, or any of that piece?
She's asking the tough questions that sex educators never want to talk about.
Like, we all want to
talk about it.
How does this affect your sex life?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's and I'm laughing because it's like, it's such a debate amongst me and a lot of my colleagues of like, where do we go when we need sex help, you know, or relationship help, you know, because there's this, you know, we're supposed to just like have it all together. And like, I tell the women in my program, I'm like, I have issues too, you know, and if something comes up, I'm like, listen to this thing that happened, you know. I think it's really helpful for people to know that, you know, we're all human. We all have stuff. I mean, I'm a super open and adventurous person, and I just in everything in life. So I think that also follows for the way I live my sexual life. And I think, so I think I've really had a lot of permission. I think that's like the big thing. And that's one of the chapters of my forthcoming book, because I've realized how much that's what my job is to give people permission. Mm-hmm. So they can then give themselves permission, right, ultimately. Yeah. But I feel like because I came into this field so young, and really when there weren't a lot of people doing it, I had colleagues who were very impassioned. I mean, all the people I was in school with, we were like on a mission. Like, this was not something there were only 3 programs in the country in sexuality at the time. So it just wasn't something that you randomly chose. Like, people were really, really passionate about it and committed. So I think having people around me like that, and just learning how to talk about sex in a way that, like, I mean, I was one of those, you know, teenagers that was just like, like, I couldn't get anything out. I would want to say something and I couldn't, like, just didn't have a sexual voice. And, you know, as soon as I really got that education and got the modeling of what it looks like to just talk openly about it, it just, everything changed. So I think having that permission has just allowed me to be like, oh, okay, I want to explore this. I want to try that. Oh, I don't like that. Oh, but let's try this over here, you know. So don't know if I'm answering your question.
Oh, and what was your experience of sex like back then when you were a teenager and you weren't talking about
it? Oh, God.
How does that compare to how it is now?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure I had a lot of really bad sex early on. I actually fell in love. Actually, the third guy I had sex with, I felt he was definitely my first love. We were together for 4 years. It was, I get really, like, I worked with young people for a lot of years, and I was very much in love as a young person. And, you know, I was with him like from sophomore year to through my first year of college. And when people treat young people like their love isn't real, or like it's just puppy love, or it's like, no, I really learned how to love from that relationship. He was a very loving, caring guy, and he did his best. I couldn't have an orgasm. I was definitely one of those. Didn't know my body because my mother had scared me away from ever touching it. So I didn't know how anything worked. I'd had no sex education. I didn't even know what my parts were. I probably hadn't even heard the word clitoris. You know, I don't,
yeah.
I mean, we're talking the 80s, you know, so, you know, and he was a really sweet, sweet guy. I mean, I remember enjoying sex with him because I very much loved him and enjoyed being with him. But he tried so hard to help me have an orgasm. And I remember one day he took my hand and put my hand on my genitals, and I yanked it away because I had been like literally in that little 2 second shaming with my mother. It was so powerful. I just was like, oh, I can't do that, you know? And he was like, no, show me, you try, you know? But I just, no one had ever said that to me, or it never occurred to me that that would be the way to figure it out. And I think a lot of women learn sex that way, you know? I mean, we learn to rely on somebody else for things, or to wait, you know? It's like, you're supposed to wait for them to ask you on a date, you know, all that old stuff that, like, you would think we've grown out of, but I think it's actually still very present in lots of ways. It shows up sometimes in subtler ways and not always that bold, but, you know, I think women do a lot of waiting, particularly when they have sex with men. So yeah, I mean, I came out as queer later, like in, I guess it started to happen in college, and then in New York is where I like really came out, it wasn't even a coming out. I was just sort of like, oh no, this is what I am, you know. I mean, the only people I felt like I had to like quote unquote come out to were like my family, because they'd just seen me have boyfriends. So, but yeah, so then I think that was a big piece too, of just like landing in New York City and getting to be around all these like queers and dykes, and like, like this is like this whole world that I hadn't got to experience yet. So that was a very big part of it too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And do you feel like in that kind of discovery phase, what was one thing that you learned that if you could give that information out to people, like, it'll unlock their kind of ability to have pleasure when it comes to sex?
I mean, I think, you know, it's what we all say, right? I mean, you have to explore your own body. You can't expect someone else is going to do it for you. And I think, you know, I do some teaching. I do a lot of teaching around sex and money, because I think they're really connected. And I think people run the same patterns around sex that they run around money.
That no one talks about ever.
And they're the two biggest taboos, right? And yet they're the two things people want most deeply. Mm. And that when they really break through around, create the biggest transformation. You know, so I think there's so many connections between sex and money. And so some of what I do, a lot of archetypal work in my work. I think archetypes are really very, very useful for helping us to understand some of our patterns, or why things play out the way they do, and why things are really repeated and really they're really recognizable, right? An archetype is recognizable. So the archetype I really have worked with a lot of my clients on, around both sex and money, is the damsel.
Oh.
You know, or the princess. So we could call her the princess, the damsel, depending, you know, slightly different flavor of the same archetype. And it's really like the damsel is waiting to be saved. And even really powerful, smart, capable feminist women, when you really get underneath of in terms of like what's really going on, they're waiting to be saved. And it's like, no one's coming to save you. It's just not. That's not how life works for anyone. So, you know, I think that's like a very deep piece in terms of that I work to get to, and then I have some work I do specifically around that, but to really help people see how they're setting up their lives and how, you know, and of course all the ways that impacts your sex life. I mean, it's, you know, I mean, sure, it can be fun to be the pillow princess once in a while, but, you know, but know that you're doing that, you're choosing that, and you're like, all right,
right,
but not like, I don't have any agency here, you know, like when it's a defined choice, then there's a sense of agency, and then that's an empowered place. When it's like, I just lay here and don't do anything and let my partner do whatever they want, like that's not empowered. And I've talked to so many guys who talk about women having sex that way. They're like, she just lays there and she doesn't do anything or say anything or make any noise, or I don't even know what she likes. I'm like, you might want to have a conversation about that. But I think we're just, you know, I mean, there's so many reasons why it's so trapped inside of us, you know.
I'm curious then if you see a lot of the damsel archetype with women around sex and money. Is there one that's a more kind of typical one for men, the archetype?
The knight.
The knight
needs to go save somebody,
on
right?
On his white horse, gonna take care of everything.
Come up and take care of it, right? And that's, you know, a lot of men run those patterns, right? Yeah. Like, let me take care of everything, you know, and then sometimes actually put their needs on the back burner to take care of everybody else. So there's different ways that that kind of caretaking thing shows up. I mean, women are like huge people pleasers. I've never had a client who's not a huge people pleaser. Like, I work with that. I work with every woman I work with on that. But I think it shows up in men too, in that knight archetype. Mm-hmm. So, and I think sometimes women can be the knight too. You know, I mean, I've definitely had lots of conversations with my queer girlfriends and people of other genders. You know, I don't think it's like necessarily gendered, but I think I think a lot of people have that knight thing too. You know, a lot of the healers, right? The healer that wants to save everybody. Yeah. Like, that's very knight energy,
right? And just so interesting how, of course, you gravitate towards
You'll
the
find your opposite, yeah. Won't you?
Like magnets, even though you don't realize it, it just like comes together. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which archetype have you tended to come from in the past?
Oh, I have all kinds of them.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't think we're just one. I think that, you know, I love Carolyn Mace's work on the archetypes. I've studied her work a bit. She thinks we all have 12 key ones. Mm-hmm. And she thinks we have 4 that are universal that we all have. And I think that's really fascinating. I love to talk to the people in my programs about that. Mm-hmm. She thinks that all of us have a child archetype. We all have, and there's different ones, the wounded child, the, I don't know, mystic child, things like that. So we all have a child. We all have a saboteur, right? We all have that part of ourselves that like tears us down on the inside, tells us we can't do it, tries to sabotage, you know, and a lot of that comes from our subconscious and how we've developed that. And then she also thinks that we all have the prostitute, which that can really push some buttons when I bring that up. And I think that's really good for people to think about, you know, and the way she talks about it is like, we all have our price. Mm-hmm. What's your price?
And it's not necessarily money, of course. Yeah. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a bigger idea of that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what's the other one? I'm missing one. I'll think of it. But yeah. And so I do a sexual archetype ritual with the women in my sexual empowerment program, the first weekend of the program. And I bring in all these actors/educators who play the different archetypes. Mm-hmm. So they actually like embody them, and the women get to experience them and interact with them, and it's very, very powerful. So yeah, it's everything from the slut to the butch to the femme fatale to the wild woman. Mm-hmm. Of course, we have our whore, we have our mother and our wife, and you know, so there's like all of these different, the prude, right? All these different archetypes that impact our sexuality. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes we're running these patterns, and I like frameworks. I like to teach in frameworks, and I think it's helpful to be able to start to see those recognizable frameworks. And then it's more about deciding on the relationship you want to have with it, not like, oh, I don't ever want to be the prude, that's horrible, or I don't want to be the wife or the, you know, but it's like, well, what relationship do I want to have? How do I want to embody that?
Yeah.
And I think that's what's powerful about it.
Mm-hmm. So. The intentional piece, yeah. you're aware of it and you're intentionally choosing things.
Was there a moment for you where you realized personally that you had the ability to choose, or did it kind of come gradually?
Oh, deep questions you all ask. I love it. The ability to choose in general, like the bigger, in the bigger...
Around like how you want to show up in relationships and sex, I would say.
Okay. I really think it was in college, and then after that, when I was really coming into like my own education about sexuality, my own clarity about my body, learning to have an orgasm finally, having sexual relationships that were exploratory. I think a lot of it came in pretty early for me. And I know that I'm really fortunate in that. I mean, I work with women, sometimes they come to me in their 40s, 50s, 60s, and they're not there, you know? They still haven't had that. And a lot of the stories are very painful, you know? I mean, I get to hear some really personal things very consistently, and there's a lot of themes, you know, but there's definitely a sense, definitely in the 50s and 60s on up. I've even talked to women in their 70s. I haven't had one do the work yet, but close. We'll see. I can't wait to have a 70-something.
You're a 70-year-old Amy Jo wants you.
But I love when they show up, you know, because it's like there's that feeling of like, oh, is it too late for me? I missed out on this part of life that's so important that everybody else got to have and I don't get to have. And it's like, it's never too late, you know? You're not going to get to be 35 again, but, you know, or 25 again. But who do you get to be as a sexual person now? Mm-hmm. Let's discover what that is.
Mm-hmm. This might be a random question, but that whole concept of women, most women can't have orgasms. I mean, that's how I heard it growing up, of most women can't have orgasms.
It's just not even possible.
Yeah. I mean, if you do, consider yourself lucky because you're in that small percentage of women that can. I'm just curious what your thoughts are, because I know I've kind of had to redefine all that for myself, but what is your thought around that whole concept of women and orgasms?
I think we're all capable, you know. I think it looks different for different people, and I do think, and I can say, you know, I trained under Betty Dodson. She was my mentor for years, you know, and she's like, every woman can have an orgasm, you know. She's very clear. She's, you know, she's got her method. I do think it's a little more complex than that, given a lot of the work I've done with women. You know, we have these like neural pathways that we build in our brains, which most people have heard about now. It's sort of like, you know, the more each time you have like the same reaction, right, you're creating this pattern. And so, you know, when I teach a lot in terms of psychology and emotional health, I teach about that. But I've started to really look at how that shows up sexually. I mean, of course we're creating those sexually as well, right? Where, you know, it almost starts to feel hardwired because it's so easy to have that same response, whatever it is, whether it's a communication, emotional kind of thing, whether it's something more physical or sexual. I think if we've been learning to have sex in a particular way for years and years, and we haven't quite cracked the code on our own pleasure or orgasm, I think our bodies do get used to that. And so I think it's hard. It can be harder the longer we've gone to get over that hump. But I absolutely think it's possible. But I think it requires someone staying really committed to it and persistent in making themselves do things differently.
Got it.
Like you can't go back into but I always do it in this position with this vibrator with the, you know, and then some people maybe aren't up for that. That's okay. Mm-hmm. You know, and just know that it's a choice.
Right.
But, yeah, I do think that it can get harder when it's been
a longer period of time,
right? Because it just becomes a more ingrained pattern in the body.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean the great thing about neural pathways, you can change them. So you start to do something different, the new neural pathway for that different reaction or response or whatever gets stronger.
Right.
So the same thing would apply for sex. Mm-hmm. So that's the hope.
Yeah, I know.
And I'm curious what you see shifting for women who are learning how to orgasm. And so there are tools and tactics and techniques, I'm sure, but when I think about it, you know, I assume that there must be some kind of emotional opening or like energetic opening. And like, how do you see what's going on underneath of the hood for women as they're learning?
Oh my God, there's so many things open up. You know, I love getting those like calls or emails like, oh my God, this thing happened. You know,
like sell a whole new.
Yeah. I mean, I think the biggest thing is probably that it shifts a woman's perspective on herself and her capabilities and what's possible for her. You know, because it's a thing that most people don't talk about. Like, women aren't sitting around most of the time at lunch being like, yeah, I don't know how to have orgasms, like with their girlfriends. Like, their girlfriends are talking about having a great orgasm or great sex, and they're nodding and pretending like they're having that too. I mean, people do that. I mean, I don't do that, but most people do that, right?
We might have done that in the past.
But, yeah, I mean, yeah. I get to have honest conversations about sex regularly. Most people don't. And so I think people are so busy hiding that when they discover that, it's like, oh my God, like I'm, you know, there's a capability that agency that we were talking about, like that sense of agency, like, oh, mm-hmm. I'm in control here. I can make something happen differently, you know, I can really experience this thing. And I think what I hear from women a lot is a lot of language about feeling left out. They feel like they're left out. There's a secret that everybody knows that they don't know. So I think it's like, you know, they feel like they're getting let into the secret. Mm. But, you know, I've seen it have other, like, powerful impact on women. I've seen women, you know, I do, like I said, the sex and money work. They start to make more money when they really step into their sexual power and that agency and their pleasure, and they allow themselves to be that vulnerable. I think, you know, there's such a huge vulnerability there that's really authentic and really attractive, right? So they start attracting more of what they want. They start making more money. They stop fearing asking for what they want. I mean, there's just so many things that flow from that. It's not just about the orgasm. It's like, it's that process of empowerment that happens there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you all see? You probably see this in your work too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll speak to the... I think it's that personal sense of power.
Mm-hmm.
That feeling of, oh my God, I can make something happen where I didn't before. Like, I think that to me is that a little bit of what you were saying with the damsel energy versus, you know, it's the, no, you're a queen. You get to have your kingdom look however you want, and you get to have the players, you know, that you want. And so it's this kind of stepping into that power and that regal kind of energy is what I see a lot. And it's really beautiful to kind of watch a woman really kind of blossom into her power like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I see that a lot. It's the best part.
Oh, I love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because it does. It never... so flips the script.
Yeah.
Of like, I'm a victim and things are happening to me and I don't understand and why and, you know, what did I do to deserve this? And I'm never going to have, you know, and then just to kind of like, oh, I'm going out and I'm flirting and I'm, you know, people are coming up to me. And it is, it's this energy of like, you can make it happen.
The victim is the fourth archetype. I was like, what am I forgetting? Of course.
Yeah,
the victim, right?
Yes.
We all have that victim.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I always say to my clients and students, you know, you can't simultaneously be a victim and be empowered. So which one do you want? Because they're antithetical, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. But we're taught to be victims. I mean, we live in a culture where we are absolutely taught to be victims. And most people have no awareness of that. No, mm-hmm. don't even see how it's showing up in them. Mm-hmm. You know, but, you know, I think at the core of that victim mentality is like, the world happens to me.
Yeah.
Life happens to me. Yeah. And then I just respond to it.
Yeah.
Rather than like, no, I actually get to choose and direct my life the way I want it to be.
Yeah. Cause and effect. Mm-hmm. Like that's the biggest shift getting out of this effect. I'm at effect for things and mm-hmm. now I'm at cause. And, mm-hmm. And then you just kind of see the world really matching them and coming, and they're just like, magic is happening all over the place. And like, yeah, does it feel good to be here?
You know, it's, I mean, I've always lived my life that way. And, you know, I also, I don't have children. I don't have a mortgage. I don't have, you know, I don't have these things that are like keeping me in any one place. But I've really, like, my whole life been that way. Of like, if there's something I really want to do, I go do it. And I've had people like come at me with like vehement jealousy and envy about that. And it's like, no, you have it too. You're not the victim here. Like, and it's fine to make the choices that you've made, but like, how could you feel more empowered in those choices?
Around your lifestyle in general, or around kind of sexual choices, or?
My lifestyle, yeah. And having that kind of freedom, you know, like I'm getting ready to put all of my things in storage, and I'm going to call it footloose. I'm going to be footloose. I'm fancy free for, you know, because I'm going on tour for my book and teaching, and there's a lot of conferences and speaking things coming up. So, and I've just never been that fancy free. I'm like, I want to experience that. I want to like not have a lot of belongings with me and just see, you know, see what opens up in that, and just travel and not feel like I have to get back to a thing. There's nothing keeping me in one place right now. Yeah. And that's very enviable.
Well, because I was going to say, I actually see that as being not that different at all from when we kind of come into that sexually liberated place, right? We're free. Freedom.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that word all the time. I'll ask the question when I'm, you know, talking to a prospect who's interested in doing some work, I will say, you know, I'll ask them what they want, and then I'll say, well, what would that give you? I love to ask that. What would that give you? And almost invariably, freedom.
Yeah.
Freedom. Mm-hmm. It's like, all right, that's pretty important. At least, you know, people in this country who grow up learning that we ostensibly have it.
Right.
So, right. Yeah, we create all our own little prisons and, you know, ways in which we feel like we can't.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can you tell us a bit about the book? And then I'm also curious to hear about who you work with and what you do with them.
Yeah. Well, the book is called Woman on Fire, 9 Elements to Wake Up Your Erotic Energy, Personal Power, and Sexual Intelligence. So, the book really came out of my work. It was not an intellectual exercise of, let me come up with these 9 elements that will be the key.
You know? I will lock myself in my writing house on Napa Hill.
Yeah, it organically came out of the work. When I really looked at the work I had been doing with women, I was like, well, what are the things I'm always working with them on? Yeah. And then it just became very clear. I'm like, okay. So we start with voice. Voice is just essential. Mm-hmm. Most women have lost their voice somewhere along the way, and they have to regain that. So I start there because I, you know, and in my programs, we do things with that right in the beginning, because I want to be able to continue to work with them to develop that voice. And that takes some time. But yeah, I work with people in a few different ways. I have clients all over the world now, which is super exciting. I have 2 women sexual empowerment programs. So one is a virtual program that's based on the 9 elements, and we do an element each month. So I'm in the middle of one of a group now, and we're starting another one later in this year, 2015. So we do that virtually. We do it with video conferencing, so the women get to know each other and see each other. It's really lovely. And then I have my in-person women's sexual empowerment program, which is a 9-month program. And we do 4 weekend retreats over those 9 months. And, you know, we've been doing them in beautiful Napa Valley, just down the road at this gorgeous house, which hopefully we'll do the next group there. But that's absolutely my favorite thing I do. I love to be in the room with people. I am a teacher and facilitator. That is really like that's my biggest hat. You know, I can do speaking and lecturing. I can do the coaching. I'm good at those things, but I love being in the room with people. Mm-hmm. So each weekend has a theme and they build on the other. It's very, very deep work. We do a lot of really special events. We always do like a special Saturday night event. We bring in theater, we bring in play, we bring in a lot of experiential work that you just don't have the opportunity to do, most of us, anywhere. Mm-hmm. And the women are just incredible who show up for this work. I mean, I'm just like, every group we get, my assistant and I were laughing yesterday. We were at a business meeting and someone was, you know, asking us about our clients. And we're like, oh, every group we get, we're like, oh, they're the best group we've ever
had. They're my favorite. But I love all of my children, but this one's the best.
It's not true. They're our favorites.
Yeah. You
know, when I taught college, I always had a favorite class. And I would tell them, I'm like, don't tell the others. But you're my favorite class. I can't wait for Wednesdays at noon. No, but yeah, I mean, they're just incredible women. I just continue to be amazed by the women who show up. Because it's a really special person that shows up for that kind of work.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right? This is not 101. I mean, this is, you know, and I always tell people, I'm like, I'm not your first stop on self-transformation highway. You know, so by the time people have come to me, they've been in therapy, they've done the yoga, they've got the spiritual path, they've done work on themselves, they understand the language of self-development, and they're ready to really like take it to a deep level with sexuality. And a lot of the women will say, I've never dealt with this part before, and I'm really ready to do that. So they're like power players, they're like awesome women that show up. And they're like, I want this part. Like, I know this is the key to having like the whole package. Mm-hmm. So they're just a delight to work with. You know, I'll get people who might be a little shyer, a little more enigmatic. You know, but a lot of them are like in their power in many ways in their life, but like they're not there with this. So
I'm curious what you feel you've learned from the people that you've taught, because there's always this as a teacher, right?
Oh God. You know what I say about coaching? Coaching is a fun house. It's just like mirrors everywhere.
Oh yeah, totally.
All the distorted mirrors. You know?
Like, yes,
that's what coaching
can relate. So, yeah,
it's just hilarious. I mean, every client that shows up, you know, it's like. And that's kind of how I know who's going to sign on. You know, the other way I work with people is through private work, and I do that virtually. And I just know, like, when I have that initial conversation and I hear them, like, talking out their patterns, talking about what they're trying to break through, I'm like, And it's all I can do to not just start totally coaching them already. Yeah. Because I'm like, oh, yeah, I know that one.
Been there.
You know, but I've been through a lot in my life. You know, I had a relationship in my 30s and went through a divorce right before I turned 40. And, you know, and I get a lot of women who are in that place, you know, and I went through a very painful divorce. That was when I needed lots of support of my friends and colleagues. And so a lot of women show up at that time in their life, and I love when they show up. I'm like, yes, give me the divorcees. Yes, I want. You know, because there's like this new lease on life people get at that point. I mean, that's when I was like, I'm sick of this. I'm not dealing with the financial issues anymore. I'm making my business fly. This is crazy. I'm leaving New York. I mean, so much happened for me in the couple years after I turned 40. And it's just like over 5 years, that's like 5 years ago now. And like my life is unrecognizable, you know? So I've done that. And so, you know, there has to be a walking of my talk, but every client teaches me something. Oh my God, you know? I mean, they're so insightful. I love to, like, you know,
like so tell me more about this.
Yeah,
thing.
I mean, they think I'm doing it. I'm like, you're doing it. I'm the midwife. I'm the guide. But, you know, it's a co-creation. But yeah, I mean, they're really tender relationships, you know. And these are people, like, I care about them so much, you know. Some of them I've never met. A lot of them I've never met. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, it's, you know, I think you can't help but respect someone who's really working hard on themselves. even when they've got stuff and maybe annoying things or maybe things that you're like, you know, you want to shake them and be like, come on.
Yeah.
Break through this.
You know? They keep coming to the mat.
There's just such a tenderness and a vulnerability that it's just, you know, that's an honor that people trust me and trust any of us to do that work with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can you tell us how people who want to learn more about you and your work can find you?
AmyJoGoddard.com. That's definitely the hub.
It's AmyJoGoddard, right?
Correct. Yeah. So yeah, that's the main hub. Women on Fire, the book, will be up and running by the time the book comes out on September 29th. My first book is now being published in second edition. So, Lesbian Sex Secrets for Men is coming out the same day because it's all the same publisher. They're just pushing it all out. And that's coming out on ebook. So that's all available on barnesandnoble.com and Amazon.
I like it. That's an amazing name.
As a guy, I'm like, oh.
I know.
I want to know.
Yeah. It sold really well.
I believe it.
That's why they're like, why don't we have this in ebook? I was like, yeah, why don't you? I mean, we're having our 15-year anniversary. It's crazy. Yeah. Wow. I have a child that's 15.
Wow.
I have a teenager.
Yeah.
The second edition's like definitely new and improved. So there were so many things we had to update. I'm like, wow, it's a different world than 15 years ago. I like, had to go through the whole manuscript, and there was like language we had to change.
Wow. Things that were just does it feel different. Like a new book for you? Like in
Well, we got to do a lot of the things I wanted to do the first time, and we got shot down on.
Okay,
like we lost so many battles.
Got it.
We lost, and I was like, it was my first publishing experience. I didn't know what my rights were. I didn't know how to advocate. I was figuring out that world. I was 29 at the time, and so it is what it is. But yeah, we have a great editor for the second edition. She totally gets the book. She's done other sex books, which I found out in publishing is very, very important. Because sex books are a little different from other books. And so they have to get that and understand how to work a sex book. Mm-hmm. And that's what, you know, it's part of why a lot of sex books don't sell. Not all of them sell well. I think you really have to have that advocate behind it. So that's been just exciting. It has this beautiful new cover. It's very sexy. It's good.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
On both.
Yeah. It's a big year. It's exciting.
I'm like, oh, baby's getting all grown up with the first one.
I got the teenager, and now we've got another infant. So I mean, mostly I'll be on the road promoting Women on Fire because that's really the work I do, and I work primarily with women. I do work with couples, and sometimes like the guy that shows up is like, I mean, always the guy that shows up is an awesome guy. Like any guy that like has the nerve to call me and like have the conversation is, you know, it's a pretty special kind of guy as well. Yeah. So, so I have a book for everybody now.
That's great.
Everybody, you know, I think Women on Fire is a great book actually for people of all genders, but you know, it's definitely, I talk about how women are socialized and more of those specifics. Mm-hmm.
And to close out, we've each got a question. Why don't I go first?
Yeah, you go first.
How would you describe sex to somebody who's never had it?
Oh man. Well, it could be a lot of things depending on what kind of mood you're in that day, but it's a way in which you could really enjoy the sensuality of your own body through touch, through either of yourself or of someone else. Sometimes if you touch yourself just right in the right places, an overwhelming, tingly, euphoric sensation can overcome you, which helps you to empty out your mind and de-stress yourself and leaves you feeling deliciously joyous. You should try it.
That might be one of my favorite descriptions, actually.
You probably got a good bank of them now. You've been asking that question.
The responses are beautiful. Every time
they
are. Gorgeous.
Yeah, I want to see them all.
I know. It's so good. Just like that, how we were talking about, because Bob had has another podcast that we were talking about a little earlier, Reclaiming Male Role Models, and he has a question he asks everybody.
At the end, I ask every man, I ask, what's your favorite thing about being a man?
My thing was like, that needs to be a compilation in a book.
Yeah. I mean, what kinds of things do people say?
All across the range, from my deep voice to peeing standing up to having sex with a woman to... I mean, my thing is the example that I get to set and kind of be as a man, that I get to change the paradigm. And they're so from funny, ridiculous, light ones to serious, deep ones, to the whole range.
I bet.
Like, I want to see that. And so it's that same thing where it's just like compiling the answers from our questions would be really cool.
Yeah, that would be a great little book.
Yeah, yeah. And my question is...
You probably never thought of it.
Yeah. Well, no, it was good to like, oh, wait, we should totally... That could be the book. And my question is, what's your favorite thing about sex?
One favorite thing. I think it's that it... You know, I spend so much time in my head. I'm such a deep thinker, and I'm a visionary, and so there's a lot that happens up here, and it is a real practice to stay embodied. Mm-hmm. And I think sex is such a way of me like letting that shit go, because I can really drop in and really, really be present and be in my body. And I love the sensuality of it, just like touch and breath and smells and connection, and, you know, all of that that happens. And just I think the way it really keeps me embodied, and really it lifts a ton of stress, you know. You know, I mean, this is like the longest I've been like single, quote unquote, in my life. I have lovers, and, you know, some of which don't live near me, so I don't see them that often, you know. I think the thing that I really miss the most is just having that touch all the time. Like, I'm a very affectionate person. Mm-hmm. So I just think like having that like human contact, that connection, and all that sensualness, and the way that brings me into my body, and then also can be very transcendent spiritually when it's really good.
Mm-hmm. Like, this is what's possible.
It is, you know. And it's not, you know, I mean, I think for people who've never had that, they, you know, and think it's not possible, it's like, it doesn't happen for me every day. That's like a, you know, those are the special ones, you know, when it's really like out of body. Oh my God, you know, I'm seeing God or whatever, Goddess, like,
whatever
happens for you. But yeah, it's powerful when that happens. And so I know the possibility of that, which means there's something very deep about the power of sex. And I think that's really what people want, ultimately. I think that's what they want. I think most people have a sense of that if they've never experienced it, or they've heard about it from other people, and so they want it. And it's very hard to conceptualize if you've never had that experience.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Oh, I love it. I'm so glad you came to the mountain.
Yeah, us too.
Just before it's going to be gone, so...
One of the last.
We have great timing.
One of our last visitors, So, yeah, thank you. What a delight to have you visit me in person.
Yeah,
this was great.
Thank you. This is important work, and we love to be able to get as many voices and stories and perspectives as possible. Mm-hmm. So, thank you.
Thank you. Go forth, people. Go forth.
Forth and do it.
Go forth in pleasure. We'll change prosper to pleasure. Go forth in pleasure.
Filling up my boots.
Gotta feel yourself up first.
To get ready for...
Natalie's gotta feel herself up first before we film the outro.
This is a women's sexual empowerment conversation. I'm getting in touch with my woman parts. So there you have it, Amy Jo Goddard, women's sexual empowerment coach, a powerhouse in the field of femininity and sexual awareness, and the possibilities that open up to us when we really tune into and give permission to our sex.
We hope that you enjoyed the episode, and if you want to stay in the loop and be the first to get to know about future episodes, you can
go to sexthepodcast.com and sign up for the newsletter. We will tell you, you'll be the very, very first person to hear about it. You can also subscribe on iTunes or any other podcast aggregator.
And if you are listening on iTunes, we have a request. Would you be willing to leave us a review?
Please.
So that we can climb up the ranks of other sex podcasts and get this information out into the world in a bigger way.
We would love you forever and ever.
And ever.
The background music is provided by bensound.com, and we will see you next time for the next sexy episode.
Stay sexy, people. Stay sexy.